Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mdiwa Gavaza, and for today, we are talking around our smart disinfecting units. We're talking about shipping containers. It is a different, part of the property discussion. We've, spoken a lot around, property on this platform. But for today, we're talking to a company that specializes in, in the property market, but on the shipping container side. But they have also created a smart disinfecting unit from, shipping containers. So we're going to be hearing a little bit around what's going on in and around, that unit, maybe what's going on in the shipping container market, and just hearing about some of the trends for today. And to help us to unpack the issues, we're going to be talking to Wandile Mohanedi, who is the founder of the business that is Smart Living Properties. So, Wandile, greetings to you.
Greetings. Hi. Thank you very much for having me.
Now, thank you so much for being with us, taking your time to be with us. I think a good place for us to start is maybe getting some insight into the company itself before we actually understand what's going on with the disinfecting unit. So, Smart Living Properties, some background.
Yes. So, what we are is that we are a Black-owned youth property development company that uses alternative building methods as one of our construction methods. So, what we do is we repurpose shipping containers into various building forms, such as your offices, accommodation, schools, libraries, retail, pop-up stores. Apart from that, we also do architectural services as well as project management. So in a nutshell, that we do as a business.
And then in terms of the smart disinfecting units themselves, how did that idea actually first come about, and how do they work specifically?
Okay, so how it actually came about with the disinfecting unit is when the president actually announced the lockdown. So for us as a business, we kind of took a big knock because it was closed. I would say we lost a lot of business. So for us, it was more of on how do we as a small enterprise give back and show and just raise our hands to say, as young businesses, we are here to assist government. So what we did is I came up with a model. So by profession, I'm actually an architect. So with a lot of research on how this COVID-19 is and how we can actually prevent one from actually contracting the virus. After some time and doing some research, that's when I came up with the model that what we can do as a business is let us design a model in such a way that it incorporates our business, which is shipping containers. So with that said, we actually designed the structure, which was actually built for large masses. Reason for large masses is we wanted to actually assist as many people as we can, as what we've seen throughout when the whole lockdown happened. You would find there were these individual disinfecting units which had one person passing at a time. And we wanted to be differentiated. We wanted to target the masses. So your schools, your taxi ranks, your train stations, your soccer stadiums once the soccer tournament starts playing again. So what we do, we actually took a 20-foot shipping container. We did the cutting and welding. We actually had the sprinkle nozzles in the inside, which also had sensors. So when one individual would walk through it, the sensor would actually detect them and it will start spraying them with the non-alcoholic disinfectant, which is about 5 seconds. So you walk in from one end and you exit in the other end. And yeah, and for us, when we did that, we trialed it out and we actually launched it. We launched it at Maponya Mall in Soweto, where we actually donated it for a certain period to the mall. for the public to use at the tax rank. And at first, they didn't understand what it is, so it was more of teaching the people on how this thing works. And after some time, the whole model actually worked, and it actually did assist. And for us, by actually doing that, it was just to show government to say, listen, we are here. We would actually like to help. And with this model, we wanted to show our initiative and actually and getting support from the government to actually roll these things out in schools and in public areas.
I guess another thing that would be worth exploring is the places where you guys have put these units in place. How have they actually been received?
It actually have received good response from the public. The actual first unit that we built after launching it at a mall and donating it to the mall, we later decided to take it to a school. There was one school in particular in Bramfisher and Soweto where there was a case of people as well as the teachers who contracted the virus. And what we did is we decided that we would really like to take this to a school and actually help them. So when we actually took the unit to a school, you know, I would say it received a good response from the learners as well as the teachers, because at a certain point during the lockdown when schools had to open up for other grades apart from the matrics, so the school actually really appreciated what we did for them, because now what they did is every time at the gate, they would spend an hour and a half just disinfecting every single child, you know, with hand sanitizer at the gate entrance all the way to the classroom. So for them, it was like they had to use up a period of a lesson for them to actually do this. And when we gave it to them, it actually helped them firstly with time. They didn't have to individually sanitize every child, because the child would just individuals walk within the unit. And at this, secondly, it actually helped in regards to reducing the spread, because after the unit was there for like a week, there weren't any cases after that.
And the other one is maybe understanding a little bit around what's the actual difference, because you gave us a pretty good picture of how if someone walks in their senses and then someone is sprayed with, you said, non-alcoholic sanitizer.
Yes.
Yeah. So from that point of view, just the practicality, you know, because someone might be sitting and saying, what's the difference between going to a place and just having your hands sprayed with sanitizer versus the, you know, this is a more like a full body experience.
Yes. So what we've learned out our research is that the virus is actually airborne. Right. And what we've noticed is that, and what we've heard from the researchers as well, was the virus can actually sit on surfaces for long hours. You know, if there's someone who's contracted the virus and is within a public area, chances of him infecting a lot of people, I would say, is very high, because it's airborne. And at the same time, once it sits on the surface, it actually sits there for a longer period before it actually dies out. So for us, it was actually telling people that it doesn't have to be a direct contact with the person for them to cough, like on how you get flu, but it's also airborne. And by that, meaning that the virus can actually stay on your clothes for a longer period, on your shoes and your pants. So for us, it's just to say, it's a matter of just showing people and learn and teaching people that, you know, having the virus airborne and actually having on your clothes can actually get you infected. Not maybe you might not get infected, but when you move from one place to the other, you might infect other people, because chances of you touching certain things and touching other items. I'll make a good example. If you're at a shopping center and you're looking to buy bread, or you're looking to buy, I'll say, a carton of eggs, you know, chance of you touching that and someone else touching it as well, even the tentacles now, they need to scan that. They don't want to have to touch the carton of eggs and that bread. So already by that, there's already contact with the virus. And now with it spraying down your whole body, it's actually disinfecting not only you or your face, but also your entire clothing.
You know, I'm actually looking at some of the pictures that were sent over of the units and how it actually works, and it seems pretty cool. And I'm just noting that there's also a section where a person can actually have their hands specifically sanitized. So from that point of view, then, since you guys had the first donation, how many of these units have you guys been able to put out to the public?
So we were able to put out, I'd say, three for now. Reason, those three were actually self-funded. So we actually raised our own funds and we actually donated those, right? And after some time, we did receive a lot of inquiries of corporates who actually seek to have these at their premises and at their functions. And one of the biggest ones was the entertainment industry. So after some time, the client, I would say they were a bit reluctant, they didn't get back to us. So we still are pursuing that to close down a few orders, but we did get a lot of inquiries regarding our system. But to date, we were able to self-fund three units, which we gave away.
So going forward then, in terms of actually mass producing these things and I guess putting them into more public spaces, what type of business model are you seeing? Do you just, I guess, sell the unit and then the corporate or the stadium or whoever buys it then takes care of it? Or is there maybe, could you see yourselves perhaps putting in like a service fee where you guys take care of replenishing sanitizers, making sure that things that it's kept clean and all of that? What type of models are you looking at from that point of view?
So initially, we were looking to do purchases, right? But after some time, we decided, so we changed our model to actually have the unit rented out. So we were going to rent out the unit and to the corporates, because one thing we've noticed is that with the COVID-19, it's one thing that's not going to stay for long. So for us, it was to rent it out to the corporates for a certain period. And after some time, once actually the COVID has been eradicated or the spread has been flattened, we would repurpose those same containers into nutrition units and donate them to schools. So what it means is, if one big corporate say, listen, we are looking to have one unit at our facility, we will build it, we will give it to them for a certain period, let's say 2 3 year lease. Once the lease is over, we go back to the funder or back to the corporate and say, as part of your CSI, if we just top up on your rental, what we can do is that we can revive or repurpose the same shipping containers and actually convert it into a kitchen unit. And with that said, that kitchen unit can be donated to a school of your choice. So if a school, so if a corporate wants to donate it to a school in Soweto to use it as a kitchen for the school to use to do their cooking, they can most definitely use it. So the model that was actually done within this unit, it had a short-term goal as well as a long-term goal. The short-term goal was to assist in flattening the COVID-19, and the long-term goal was to have the same units in schools for nutrition.
Now that actually makes sense. At least it sounds like there's an exit strategy with the whole thing, and you guys have evolved your business model, especially something that's able to give you guys money on a continuous basis as opposed to a one-time sale. So, maybe taking a step back, zooming out beyond just the disinfecting units, you guys are specialists when it comes to shipping containers. As a business, as a sector, as a category within, the property market, how has that business done? I think maybe we can look at it, pre and post COVID.
Yeah, so as you say, our business does specialize in container conversions. And apart from the disinfecting unit, as a business, we have been doing very well. We have built libraries, and pop-up stores. So I'll say a lot of our clients are other SMEs who are actually looking to start like a fashion clothing store where they want to have a container where they can use it as a clothing outlet. Or you'd have a person who says, "Are you the one that start a butchery?" We do have a model for that. So we have received a lot of young business people who like to expand their businesses, and they feel that with this mobile unit, that's one of the way to go for them, because at the same time, they don't want to be restricted in staying in one location for long. But with the container, they can be they can actually be mobile and move from one area to the next, depending on where the business takes them. And also, just to add on that, we are big into the accommodation space, which we have built accommodation units using shipping containers, bachelor flats, which has been one of our prototype that we are currently busy building in Soweto, and we are looking to launch it very soon.
From that point of view, I've got some curiosities, and the first one is, when it comes to the small business, could you maybe give us an idea of costs? Because at the business day, for example, our offices are at Hillon Empire in Parktown, and for a long time, fine, I won't say for a long time, but for the last year or two, at least before the lockdowns came into effect, we had a coffee shop downstairs that was in a shipping container. So maybe taking a normal size shipping container, converting that into a coffee shop, what type of cost implication does that actually look like for a typical small business owner?
So for a coffee shop, and if it's a 40 foot, you'll be looking at about, I'd say, 98,000 to actually get a fully fitted coffee shop, meaning that it will be the shipping container, which is fully insulated, electrical, meaning it's going to have lights, plugs, as well as the serving hatch, or also including the flooring as well. So meaning that with that amount, you can actually start operating the business. It will be just be a manner of the owner of the units to have the fittings, such as your appliances. But apart from that, the structure comes fully kitted with the new structuring.
Where are you guys actually doing the modifications?
So currently, we're doing the modifications in Lanseria, where that's where we actually do our conversion. We're currently leasing there, but we're looking to actually have our own factory where we would run full production there.
And the other curiosity, I'm pretty sure a lot of people wonder about this, because they are shipping containers, and in the beginning, when those conversions started a few years ago, the idea was that there are too many shipping containers around the world that are going unused. How do we, find some sustainable, solution to make sure that we don't pile up waste, etc.? So the question then becomes, when you guys are, doing the conversions, are these actual shipping containers that would have come from a ship and they've, done their time, and now someone is like, okay, I'm done with this shipping unit, you guys can do with it what you want? Or are these containers being built at the original factory and coming to you guys? How does that process work?
So how it works is we actually use pre-owned shipping containers. So we don't, the reason for that is firstly is the costs. Secondly is the environmental impact. As you did mention that a container will be used a number of times, and once it has reached its lifespan for cargo, they actually get stored at the depots, which they will sit there for a number of years, So with that said, for us as a business, we saw an opportunity because containers mainly are used for importing and exporting goods, and so they weren't really built to be converted for any other thing besides importing and exporting, which for us it's actually the best structure. The reason firstly being that structurally it's very strong, so it doesn't bend or break easily. And with that said, I say the type of steel that's been used to build shipping containers can actually withstand the different climaxes. So if I say could use a good example, if it snows in the other country and it's very hot in South Africa, so that same container can withstand the coldness in one country as well as withstand the heat in another. And for us, we felt that due to the environmental impact, there's a solution of actually using those pre-owned, which we in business we like to call them cargo, non-cargo worthy containers. So we use the non-cargo worthy containers, which we refurbish and convert thereafter.
And in South Africa, how would you say that containers have been received? I think if you go to a lot of places, I've seen the police, for example, some police stations will have a number of shipping containers as a way to expand their office capacity. We've spoken about, coffee shops and in some cases even kitchens. I hear that especially dark kitchens are being done out of shipping containers. But in terms of on the residential side, so from what you've seen, are South Africans using containers more for commercial purposes or more on the property side, on the accommodation side?
To be honest, currently the focus or the demand is more on the business side. So that's why you would see pop-up stores, the offices, ablutions. That's what you see. So when it comes to residential, it's still a bit taboo for a lot of individuals. I'll use a good example. We built a prototype unit which is currently in Soweto. When we first brought in the containers to Soweto, a lot of people didn't really understand what was happening. Most of them assumed that we were building a puzzle shop, but as time went on, they actually discovered that these units don't look anything like a puzzle shop. So in the beginning, it caused a lot of curiosity, but once it got to a point where when one would walk through, they would see a door, they would see a window, they would see a sliding door, then it caught their interest, and we actually got a lot of people just bypassing, actually asking, listen, can we come in and actually see what these are? And once they entered the unit, they were actually pretty surprised because they didn't really expect that a container can be converted into a house. So a lot of people still find it very taboo. And once they've seen the unit, that's where a lot of people are like, I like this thing. Can you be able to do this in my yard? Can you build a 2-bedroom house for me and my family? And I would say in regards to the residential accommodation part, I would say it's slowly but surely getting there. A lot of people still don't understand it, but once they see the actual model, that's when their mindset actually changes, that listen, I like this. As I said, with the unit that we've built, that's when a lot of people didn't understand. But once a person actually walked in and saw what it can be done, they actually wanted more than what they thought. And hence, that's the reason why we actually built the prototype, because when we designed it on the computer and on paper, we actually went to a few funding institutes as well as did our own survey. With the funding institutes, we said that we would like to actually do this model and actually roll it out. But for them, they liked the pretty picture. They liked the floor plan. They actually understood, but they couldn't really picture it. So, which meant for us as a business, we had to raise our own money to actually put up an actual physical structure. Then once that was done, we actually brought the we actually did a survey where we individuals who were bypassed, we actually called in to come see and tell us what they thought were. We actually did call in the funders and said, listen, from the initial plan that was on paper, this is the physical structure and this is what it can be done. And they actually saw our vision and they actually said this thing can actually be upscaled to a point where you could also have apartment buildings using these shipping containers.
As we come to the end of the discussion, we just have time for one more point, and I'd like to follow up on what you're just saying, to maybe get a sense, because for you guys to be in this business, it means that you've seen an opportunity. And clearly in South Africa, businesses and commercial enterprises have definitely seen the advantages of shipping containers and their versatility. I mean, you guys have a disinfecting unit that you could also then, at the end of its time as a disinfecting unit, repurpose to become a kitchen or any other use case that a business may want. So the versatility is definitely there. But, always very curious on the residential side, where are you seeing the opportunity? Is it going to be when South Africans do come around and they start seeing the value? As you said, slowly but surely it's happening. Where's the opportunity? Is it in suburbs? Is it in townships, high density areas, low density? Is it actual houses, or does it become an extension of a house? Does it become maybe a cottage unit in someone's yard? Where are you seeing the opportunity for South Africa?
So where I'm seeing the opportunity for South Africa, I'd say is the cottages where one can actually have it in their backyards. Secondly, is to have them as apartments, where it can be rental apartments, either for social housing or for individuals who would actually like to invest or get into the property space. Because one thing you notice when it comes to construction, there's a whole lot of jargon, there's a whole lot of technicalities involved. And with a shipping container, you can stack containers 6 stories high without having a single engineer on site. That's how self-sustained they are. That's how self-engineered these units are. So I would say moving forward for South Africans, I see these units being rental apartments as well as cottages. In regards to household where an individual would like to have to build their own house as a to live in a container, I would say yes, it can be done, but the cost, I would say the cost of it might be slightly a bit different in regards to having the residential part. Firstly, being said is, as I say, shipping containers are a bit taboo. Not only for certain individuals, but also for other corporates. I'll use an example of if one had to go to a financial institute, such as a bank, and say, I would like to take a bond or a building loan and I want to build myself a container house. Banks don't accept, I'll say in regards to bonds, banks won't approve shipping containers because for them, they still see it as a movable structure. So they can't really give you a bond for that. So meaning that if a person would say, I want to live in a container house, a 2-bedroom, a 3-bedroom, for them, it's a matter of they need to have the money to actually do that. But now, how we sell our accommodation in a residential space, we market it in such a way that it can be used as a rental income for an individual. So if you live in a house and has a yard and you would like to have accommodation at the back, that can actually generate you income and these units pay themselves off within a period. I would say that's the way to go. So I would say residential, having big apartments and as well as cottages. The cottage one, it's one of the models which we are driving, not only through certain individuals who want them, but you also want to drive it in government. because what you've seen a lot in township is that one household will have three or four shacks in the yard where they are, the owner of the property gets rent from those tenants. But one thing we've noticed is that with such conditions, you would have illegal connections in regards to electricity, as well as when there's a fire, chances are when one shack burns up, it'll burn three. For us also, the market shacks actually having a unit, which each unit has its own bathroom facility as well. Yeah, bathroom facility means got a shower, a basin, and a toilet. So meaning, so with that said, we want to get rid of individuals, or if they want to use a toilet, they want to have to go share a toilet to come on. So that's the model that we're driving.
So that's been it with us talking to Wandile Mohanedi, who is the founder of Smart Living Properties, and he is just giving us some insight into what the shipping container market looks like in South Africa.
If I can just add, on that, in regards to social housing, we were also looking to actually go into to assist government in doing RDP housing, where it can actually help. It could actually help individuals who are low income earners to actually benefit from this. So, meaning that with the government subsidizing them, we can actually build a one bedroom or two bedroom units, and then the owner, then government can actually subsidize individuals to actually live in those units. So opportunities are very great in the space, but as I said, with residential, it's a bit tricky, but one can actually invest in rental property.
Okay, you've heard it right there. That was us with Wandile Mohanedi, who is the founder of Smart Living Properties, giving us some insight into what the shipping container market is looking like in South Africa. They are a specialist, and they recently came up with a disinfecting unit that actually goes and tries to augment or to help the situation where people are having themselves sanitized. And you are saying that in certain places, like in schools, where they spend an hour and a half, sanitizing children, on a daily basis, this is a solution that can actually help to reduce the amount of time that's spent doing that. And also at the same time, just saying that they have a couple of units that are out there, and then the process of trying to monetize the model, they're going to be using a renting business model, because when we do defeat COVID-19, then they can repurpose what are now disinfecting units to something else, showing the versatility of shipping containers. Also giving us some insight into what the commercial sector has been using these units for, and also how, the evolution is going in terms of the residential space. And he's saying that the opportunity is going to be more around, having apartments and cottages in people's yards, as opposed to building full houses, because there's still some taboo that's around that. So Wandile, thank you so much for joining us for today.
Much appreciated, and thank you for having me on the show.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
A very fascinating conversation around shipping containers. The disinfecting units, I think there's definitely a use case for that, especially in some of the mass areas. The example that he gave about the school, the fact that you at the gate or wherever, people one by one, you're disinfecting people, as opposed to just walking into something and it's just happening automatically. It does sound as if there's a use case for it. Now, one would hope in such a situation that corporates or the government or institutions will invest in something like this, because it certainly does sound at least from a practicality point of view, like a good idea. And especially in some of the mass transit areas or people or places that have a lot of walk-in traffic or a lot of foot traffic, it certainly does make sense. But one of the key takeaways for me was just hearing about what's going on in the shipping container market, because in other parts of the world, especially developed countries, it's a trend that's really taken off. You know, entire neighborhoods of you know, shipping container houses, etc. Though in South Africa there's still that taboo, but in other parts of the world it's something that is actually, you know, working out. So it's been great on that point of view, but one wonders how long it would take for it to become mainstream in South Africa and whether or not it actually has that viability. Certainly on the commercial side, businesses in South Africa really have taken to shipping containers. We see it with, let's say, government, you know, registering people, the IEC, you know, voter registration, the police example that we gave earlier on, using it as a way to augment some of its processes, coffee shops, etc. So good on that end. But one is also then thinking about other use cases, because one dealer actually said that they're taking a bit of a knock in their main business because of COVID-19. But in some cases, it may end up being a blessing, because a lot of companies, corporates, are sitting there with massive property portfolios, campuses, and a lot of people are saying that they don't want to come back or to return to offices. Those that have the option to not have to work in the office, a lot of people are saying that they'd rather have that flexibility. Maybe not completely work from home, but certainly not going there 9 to 5 every single day, Monday to Friday. And that reduces instantly the demand for some of this commercial real estate, especially for offices. And one, you can then think about it from that point of view, that in some instances, let's say a bank, for example, instead of going out and renting, you know, from a mall or having a commercial lease in a shopping center or one of the big areas, you know, get yourself into a 5-year lease. If people are more and more using, you know, banking apps, perhaps as a bank, you could create mobile banking halls, you know, that will go, let's say, in a certain area, you create those pop-up banks. If someone really needs to see someone, they know that they can actually go to this place. There's going to be a pop-up bank that's going to be there on, let's say, Tuesday, the 1st of December. We're going to set up and we'll be there until the end of the week. And then people will know that, okay, fine, I mainly do my banking through my app, but for these days, I can actually go into a branch, quote unquote, and they come, they set up the branch. You're not renting, you're not leasing. And when it's done, you can probably move around with that thing and co-service your clients in that way. The reimagining. I'm just thinking about reimagining. We've heard so much about reimagining, and this is one of those ways that people or a corporate could reimagine how they actually interact with their clients. Just an idea. So that's been it. Thank you so much to everyone who was listening. Thank you to Wandile for joining us. Remember that you can find our latest podcast on Business Life. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab. On Twitter, we're #BDSpotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller, together with Modiehi Mashemaete. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.